Welcome. My name is Liana Usa, and I'm very pleased to announce today's interviewee, who is Professor Marlene Dekker, and she specializes in inclusive development in Africa. Today, we will talk about the topic of panel H48 from the African Nose Conference, which is about bridging the gap between research and policy. And Marlene will conduct a roundtable discussion to reflect on experiences on policy dialogues in practice in Africa and also in the Netherlands. These are based on the four knowledge platforms that are established by the Netherlands Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Moreover, it's interesting to say that Marlene is also coordinator of the secretariat of one of the platforms, which is called Include. Welcome again. Thank you for joining today.
Thank you.
And I'm very excited to talk to you about these knowledge platforms, and particularly the knowledge platform you are coordinating, and also how it can bridge the gap between research and policy. Could you perhaps start with explaining how you are involved with the Include knowledge platform?
That's already a very big question. So I'm coordinating the knowledge platform, or I'm coordinating the secretariat of the knowledge platform. Mm-hmm. And the secretariat is composed of a consortium with three organizations. So that's the African Study Center in Leiden, the African Economic Research Consortium in Nairobi, Kenya, mm-hmm. and the Broker, which is a knowledge brokering organization based in The Hague. And these three organizations together form the secretariat. So each of these organizations have like one or two or three staff members that form the secretariat. And I'm coordinating the secretariat. And the Africa Study Center, I'm working at the African Study Center, and the Africa Study Center is also what you call the secretary of the consortium.
Mm, right. So it's a combination of three organizations that form the secretariat of the Include. I came to the realization that there are multiple and different definitions of inclusive development you can find on the internet, perhaps a bit inconsistent among papers and dissertations. So please, could you help me out? What is the definition of inclusive development?
That's a very important question, and there's lots of debate about it, of course, also within the platform, because what is nice of the platform is that the core of the platform consists of a group of 30 thinkers and doers, both from Africa and the Netherlands, from different disciplines, and also, you know, some from academia, but also people from policy, private sector, etc. So there is a lot of different opinions and insights. But for us, the core has been to really acknowledge that development is more than just economic growth. Hmm. So you shouldn't only look at poverty, monetary dimensions of well-being, but you should also look at the non-monetary dimensions, such as access to education, health, political freedom, etc., etc. So a move away from a purely economic focus. And the second point that is really important for us about the concept of inclusive development is that it's not just about the level of particular outcomes, so income or education, but also about the distribution. And so this inequality dimension is very important.
And in many African countries, I believe also in Nigeria, for example, there are different gradations in ethnicities. And well, how is Include, for example, doing its job in such countries where ethnicities have different gradations?
Yeah. And so the prime goal of Include is to make knowledge that is available useful for policymakers. So our work is very much research-based, and what we try to do is to convey the message in such a way that policymakers can do something with it. So in that sense, what we've identified particular lenses with which we look at specific topics. And social equity is one of those lenses. Territorial equity is one of those lenses, and inclusive governance is one of those lenses. And this means that when you talk about social equity, you talk about the differences between men and women, for example, or between the young and the old, or the rich and the poor, or different ethnicities or different religious groups. So these are dimensions that are important to look at. And spatial equity obviously refers to spatial distribution of development in a country.
Yep.
Very often you see, for example, differences between the north and the south, or between the east and the west, or a major economic hub and some more marginal areas. And it is especially these territorial or geographical spatial inequalities that we also want to put to the fore.
Okay.
And then the realization that it's not about averages, but it's really about the distribution of benefits.
Okay. Then my follow-up question would be, how come that there is a gap between research and policy?
Yeah. Well, there's a range of factors, I think, that are important. One is that quite often academic research is hidden behind walls, in electronic walls, that is to say, or it just sits on a shelf, and it's often only communicated within academic circles and not so much communicated to others. Some academics are not quite used to sort of explaining their findings in more layman languages. Academic language is a particular language. And especially when you're looking at, for example, anthropology or economics, they have very specific way of talking or writing. And then the policymaker question always is like, yeah, but what does it mean for us?
Mm-hmm.
And so those are two elements, I think, that are important on the academic perspective. Then if you look at policymakers, there is so much knowledge out there. You know, also policymakers, they go to Google and find all sorts of information, but then they don't quite know how to weigh the evidence. Eh? So which evidence is more important or more robust compared to other evidence? So that's another element, I think, that plays a role. And what also plays a role is, you know, it's not always the case that when the evidence is there, the most logical policy direction will be chosen, because of course policy making is more than just evidence. There's also politics.
Yes.
So there needs to be political will and particular collaborations and all that. So I don't think there will ever be a situation where policy making is purely evidence-based, because there's always a politics and a political dimension involved as well. And to be perfectly honest, very often research also produces mixed results. And so there's not always a very clear message that if you do A, it will lead to B. There are so many contextual factors that play a role.
Yes, and then let's say we have different kind of evidences that based on research, obviously, and then you were presented to the policymakers, and then a situation I can draw is, for example, they say there are so many evidences, but what is the right choice? How do we do that? And they obviously want to have the most certain way of saying, okay, this is what we need, this is going to work. But I can imagine with all these different complexities, different settings, that there are so many deep uncertainties that I'm wondering, how is this presented?
Yeah. I think this is a very very right observation, and also pointing at, let's say, the challenges that may be there in these research to policy linkages. So what we as a platform always say, you know, it's not up to us to make certain policy decisions, but it's up to us to explain what the possible consequences could be. So what we do is we present policy options. And let's say the advantages and disadvantages of particular ways of doing things. And then in the end, it's up to policymakers, also as part of the political process, to decide on the best, on the right choice, on the choice that they want to support.
And then I've also read multiple articles about how informal sector, informalities, are the source of sustenance or the income for many people in Africa. For example, in Lagos, according to the Africa report, they mentioned that the informal sector employs approximately 5.5 million people, which is 3/4 of the state's labor force. How does that work with policymaking? Because these are unregulated and sometimes even unknown businesses, but how does that link to, inclusive development, policymaking? Could you perhaps elucidate on that?
Yeah. Now, I think this is a really, really important observation, because what you notice is that very often governments just think about the formal sector and they have, and ideally every development takes place through the formal sector. But in practice, if you look at employment rates, and you already share the example of Lagos, but in other countries like Kenya or Ghana, there's an estimation that 90% of the population works in the informal sector.
That's even more, yeah.
Yeah, but what is quite important to note is that, it's a bit unclear what this actually means, the formal and the informal sector. Because, for example, market women in Ghana, who are counted as the informal sector, they pay levies to be able to be on a market. Mm-hmm. And so they don't have a registered business, but in order for them to trade on the market, they have to pay a levy to have access to a market stall. So that there is some form of taxation, but not in a registered form. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to keep that in mind in this type of discussion. And given the size of the informal sector, I think it's obvious that, when talking about inclusive development, you somehow have to include that as well. Mm-hmm. Because if you're only looking at formal sector, you reach only a very small tip of the iceberg. So, and there's usually a big debate about formalizing the informal sector.
Yeah.
It has been tried. It's very, very difficult. And that, I think, largely has to do with the fact that for many people, it's quite beneficial to stay under the radar. And so it's important to understand, so why do people don't formalize? If the formal sector would be such a great place to be, mm-hmm. why do not more people or not more businesses formalize? And that has to do somehow with the distrust of the government or the municipality, but also the fear of having to pay too much taxes, for example, and not getting anything in return for those taxes. I think what is really important is that people understand the magnitude of the sector, that people understand, or that policymakers understand, that it's not necessarily just a dichotomy. Also in the formal sector, there are many links to in the informal sector and the other way around. So it's a very diffuse picture, if you like, on the ground. And I think it's really about discussing what is the reality on the ground and how that impacts on particular policies, and the other way around. So how particular policies could impact on also informal sector workers.
to wrap it up, we addressed different dimensions of research policy and policy making, and also the bridge between. So thank you for being here.